Welcome to the Quick 10 podcast, brought to you by QuickTrack, focusing on all things FedCon and cyber defense from different perspectives and different personalities, all in 10-ish minutes. Here's your host, Derek White.
All right, welcome back to another episode of the Quick 10 podcast. I am your host, Derek White from Beryllium at QuickTrack. We are joined by xylophones in the background, but also James Harper here right in front of me in the flesh at a CMMC conference. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Busy, crazy. I'm losing my voice. Spending a couple minutes with us. Tell the listeners or watchers, if you're watching them on YouTube or on their podcast platform, a little bit about you, what you guys do, your background, then we're going to get into some the fun topic of FIPS.
Okay. So my background is with major contractors for about 25 years. So think Raytheon, L3Harris, Lockheed Martin. Most of that time has been spent with secure communications development, first as a developer of firmware or cryptography, among other things. Full stack. I did full stack with Windows programs to show blue forces and red forces, that kind of thing. All with a communications piece to it, and obviously all with a crypto cybersecurity type of piece with that. So first half of my career, that was what I did. And then the second half was the project management of that kind of thing. So I expanded into more of a multi-disciplined engineering type of role for the technical, and then obviously the project management and review and audit of everything that other people were doing before it went out the door to the customers.
So you lived it and you breathed it.
So I lived it and I breathed it.
Scratched it.
Yeah, from a whole standpoint, you know, from electrical to mechanical to software. And it's all important because CUI or something that's classified, it hits all of those pieces.
Yeah. So now, here as we sit here in the time stamping this a little bit, even though people watch it in the future, it's end of May. You were telling me before we got on here, you're spending a lot of time in the assessments now. So you've been there. Let's talk about the FIPS side of things. That's a big topic. It's a big nugget that's in there that we haven't had a lot of conversations today about other people, but walk through a little bit about that, what you're seeing, some ideas, some thoughts where you can give people some guidance on what to expect there.
Okay. So there are a lot of rumors that go around about FIPS that you have to have a bunch of hardware devices that are really expensive. And it's very hard to implement. And that can be true. Mm-hmm. It can also be very, very false. So let's talk about what FIPS is, first of all. FIPS is a standard for what cryptography algorithms are allowed to be used. Mm-hmm. So the major one that we use for everything from banking to protecting CUI is AES. Mm-hmm. That's the big one. But it also allows you to use some other algorithms besides that. And those algorithms, like I said, are used everywhere from your banking to just a Wi-Fi access point in a hotel or an airport. So what exactly is FIPS encryption then? And the answer is that the government wants to make sure that the implementation of that encryption algorithm is done in a secure, safe way, mm-hmm. without a backdoor for an adversary to come in and exploit. So we have a cryptography module program that certifies implementations of these algorithms. And those modules have to be used to protect CUI. So do you have to have a FIPS encrypted router or Wi-Fi access point? And the answer is, if you have a network where everything is local, mm-hmm. and then you encrypt that as it goes out your network, it's like for a VPN or something like that, mm-hmm. then at the point where it leaves your organizational boundary, it has to be FIPS encrypted. So if you encrypt it at your desktop or your mm-hmm. laptop, and then it's decrypted at the other end at a desktop or a laptop, none of the equipment in between has to be FIPS validated. So that includes your own router,
yep,
and obviously the router of your ISP and the internet backbones and all of these kinds of things. So it's just where it leaves the boundary. You have to make sure it's encrypted.
Yep.
So there's scenarios where it has to be encrypted by the router, but other scenarios like a virtual desktop solution where it doesn't have to be encrypted by that router. What kind of routing do you need if it needs to be encrypted at the router? You need one that has a validated module.
Mm-hmm.
So the routers that we have that are commercially available in a store like Best Buy, they have the same AES encryption, but it's not a validated module. It's not a validated module because it costs hundreds of thousands of dollars and months, if not years of time, to get a module validated.
For sure.
So a commercial product is not going to have that that capability. So that's basically the bottom line.
Know what you're buying. Understand your compliance. This is why I like, so for the audience here that's not technical, they don't know that you know what you're talking about because that probably went over their head. And this is why people like James are great to work with. But the technical side, there are a lot of people on the technical side that probably that's just not their bag, right? Because if CMMC and CUI is newer to you from a standard standpoint, that's stuff that's just, like you said, not a typical deployment of certain equipment, right? So understanding that's really big. You were talking to before this to kind of transition to the next section here is governance within the organization and how important that is to not just buying things, turning things on, having stuff written down.
Sure.
Walk through that a little bit.
So the way that works and relates to FIPS encryption is that you need to know where your CUI is coming into your organization, who touches that CUI,
mm-hmm,
what networks are touching that CUI, and then how it leaves your organization.
Yes.
And in order to really know that, you need to have policies and procedures in place for each of your employees' job titles and roles and responsibilities.
Yep.
And if you don't have that in place, one thing that you have a problem with is communication in an organization. You have two people, you have one line of communication between them.
Mm-hmm.
If you have three people, you have a triangle,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
And when you get up to 10 people, or more, it becomes such a mess, right? And nobody knows what's going on.
Yeah.
And you'll end up with people that don't do anything, people that work too hard, people that don't have a career path. You start getting employee turnover. This is one of the biggest reasons that companies in general cannot get over that threshold of about 10 employees.
Yeah.
But you need to have that in place for CMMC so that you know where your data is flowing through the organization. And once you know that, then you know where to put this FIPS encryption into place.
Yeah.
And CMMC is such a wonderful opportunity to put that corporate governance in place that allows the small company to become a medium or a large size company. It's not technically required. Right? You have to have configuration management for CMMC. But do you really have to have the corporate governance in place?
Yeah.
Not really. But if you don't, your effort is not going to be very successful. And I think that's the big takeaway that I try to give people that I talk to. You start out with giving the corporate governance in place.
Yep.
And then only then do you go to mapping where the CUI flows.
For sure.
So when you hear people in our industry talk about mapping the CUI flow, they forget about that corporate governance, which is really the prerequisite to getting all of this started.
It can be
ISO 9001. It could be another framework, as long as it's very well thought out and mapped. Employee responsibilities, configuration management, how we do business, how we onboard and offboard employees, those kinds of things.
Yeah, and the onboard and offboard employees thing, you hit it a few minutes ago too. When the company is smaller, it's easier to manage.
Right.
And a lot of those small companies don't have a true HR person. Right.
And they all go through that one guy at the top.
Yep, and then all of a sudden you get bigger and you grow and you scale and all of a sudden you're at 25, 30 people and you still don't have HR. Do you have a process? We're not even talking about CMMC specific. Do you have a process on their laptop, setting them up, apps they have access to. I mean, all that, that's what they're trying to get you to do is do that from a core principle. Right. So that every time James hires somebody or someone gets added, that you do follow that stuff. And it is almost, that's a good point. It's almost forcing the leadership and the people that run the business. I mean, that the user doesn't necessarily care about any of this, right? Yeah. They want to do the job. They want to work hard. They want to be appreciated. You start to lose some of that if you lose the data control, but also leadership has to be able to build that culture in. And that's, I think that's a great point.
You ended up with a lot of shadow IT when you have those kind of issues without a corporate governance, because what happens is the company, in order to get compliant with CMMC, they shut down the pathways that people have been using ad hoc to talk to each other. And the other thing that companies that are not going after CMMC or they're just in the beginning of their effort will do is just make everybody have access to everything. So the HR person has access to the engineering diagrams and the engineer has, I have actually seen companies where the engineers, not supposed to, but they have access to all the salary data and, you know, so they leave the company and they take that with them.
Well, I mean, to be fair, you buy a laptop from Best Buy and it's got something on it. It's good. It works. So I know it's easy for us to say, but no, this is good. Thank you for spending some time. Obviously, we could talk about this forever. But if people do want to connect with you, follow along, talk to you, where do you want the viewers and listeners to go? You want LinkedIn, website?
LinkedIn is my preferable thing. That's my nexus. And then I spread out from there to the email, website, or phone.
Perfect. We'll drop that in the description so people see that. Okay. James is very active on LinkedIn. You do great content. It is fun to watch. Thank you for spending some time with me. We'll have you on again sometime and really appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thanks, James.
Take care.
Thank you for listening to this episode, and make sure to subscribe to the Quick 10 Podcast wherever you get your podcasts, and check us out on YouTube as well. For more information about QuickTrack, visit our website at www.quicktrack.com. That's C-U-I-C-K-T-R-A-C.com.